Hey there, guys, and welcome back to the Travis and Damien podcast, episode 133. You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube, and more. Today, we are talking about the Mario vs. Donkey Kong, layoffs in the games industry, Rooster Teeth, Nintendo vs. Yuzu, and more. But as usual, we're going to start with our recent activities, and I will let Damien take the lead.
Yeah, so I have a lot of stuff here. You know, after Persona was finished, was like 80 hours, you know, I was able to play some other things for like a week before the other big JRPG came out. But I was able to play a variety of stuff. So first being Splatoon 3, Side Order. So this is the DLC for Splatoon 3. And, you know, I feel like Splatoon 3 in general has been pretty mixed with a lot of people. I know that's mostly for like the multiplayer stuff. Like, you know, I played like, I had like 60 hours in the game. So I did play a bit of it. But I can't really tell you any of the competitive changes or any of that. I know some people are just disappointed in like the maps. Some of the weapon sets aren't as good. Again, I can't comment on that stuff because I don't play Splatoon at that level. But for me personally, I enjoyed Splatoon 3. Like, I had a good time with it. I thought the base campaign was a lot of fun. I thought it was a lot better than Splatoon 2's base campaign. Salmon Run was just as fun as ever. I think the addition of like the new like big boss fights were fun. So overall, I you know, I like Splatoon 3, and I was really excited for the DLC. And, you know, the DLC is also pretty controversial with some people because it's not like a straight up just campaign like Octo Expansion was, where it's just like, oh, here's just a set of levels, like do it. This one is a roguelite. So, and that, I think that's pretty cool. I don't think Nintendo's ever really attempted to do a roguelite before. And as their first attempt at it, I thought it was pretty good. So basically, it works where you go up like a 30 floor tower. And each time you clear a floor, it could either be like you push some like a ball around to like get into a slot. You have to do splat zones. What's the other objective? You have to like destroy these portals that are spawning enemies. And I think there was one more. Oh, and then it was like tower control where you had to like shoot the little thingy and put the thing up to the top or whatever. So those are like the main objectives you would do to like randomly switch. And those are switch what like map you do them on. And each time you clear it, you get a chip that powers your character up some way. So, like, you get more ink or, you know, all the standard Splatoon power-up things. And then as you keep going up and up the floors, you get stronger and stronger. You unlock the currency that you could use to upgrade your runs in the future so you can make runs easier. So, yeah, it has all the things you would kind of expect from a roguelite. And I think it was a good time, you know. I think the Splatoon gameplay really... I guess fits that format because Splatoon is honestly very versatile. It could be like a straight up multiplayer shooter. It could be like more of an action platformer, or it could just be like a roguelite, I guess. And I think it fits each of those things very, very well. Honestly, the main complaint I have with this whole mode is I don't think there's enough like randomness to it. And I think that's like a main problem I have with a lot of like more big budget roguelites, right? Like they just don't have as much shit in them as they probably should. Like, the upgrades are fine. They're pretty, like, you know, boring. Oh, you do more attack speed or whatever. You can get some crazy stuff, but a lot of them is just, like, yeah, it's just, like, stat changes and that's it. Like, you don't get anything too crazy, like Isaac or Gungeon or whatever. And, you know, there's only a certain amount of maps in the game. Like, there's maybe, like, 20 maps. And they have a lot of different variations to them. But they do get very samey really fast. Like, I basically did everything the mode has to offer. Like, I did all these palettes, which are like different loadouts you could use throughout the floors, and I think there's like 12 of them, and I completed all 12 of them. And you know, by the end of it, I'm like, okay, I've seen like the same floor like 20 times at this point. So I definitely think the game needed just more variation in maps and stuff, and maybe some more boss fights as well. There's only really like 3 boss fights in the final boss, and the final boss never changes. It's always the same final boss. So I felt like it just really needs just more stuff, but I feel like the base of it's really good. I honestly would like to see them do another roguelite, either in Splatoon like 4 or whatever, or in a different Nintendo like game, and sort of like get the foundation of this and just make it better. Because I think this is a great foundation. Like, I played a lot more of this than I thought I would. Like, I thought I was just gonna play maybe like a few runs and then move on with my life, but I ended up playing like 10-ish hours of it. Because I'm like, this is fun as hell. Like, it is, because I think Splatoon gameplay is just fun in general. So but yeah, if you're not into roguelites, as I see a lot of people in like Twitter or Reddit like being like, I do not like this because they're just not familiar with the genre, then I say probably like save your money. And overall, I still think Octo Expansion is like just better, just because that that DLC was like really good for no reason. But I still had a really good time with it. I thought it was good. And I'm happy they tried to do something different besides just like another campaign for Splatoon, because we already have like four of those at this point. So yeah, I ended up liking it quite a bit. So next is the big game, I guess, is Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. So this game is very large, and it's
how many
really
hours?
Good.
How many hours so far?
So I have 40 hours in it. I put a whole ass work week. All I've been doing is I would do my schoolwork, go do my work, you know, do actual work, and then I would just play this like the rest of my life. I just keep playing it. Because honestly, to be fair, I want to, because it's fun as hell. And two, if I don't do this, I won't be able to finish this fucking game because it's long as shit. So yeah, this game is really, really good. Like it's very good. And I guess I could go more with the cons first, just to get that out of the way, because I don't really think there's anything like too bad about the game. It's mostly like technical stuff. The performance mode is like not good. So, you know, if you try to go for that 60 FPS mode, just don't. Like, the game looks like shit. Like, it's very blurry. Like, I don't even think it's a stable 60. They said they're going to fix it, but, you know, at this point, just play 30. And I do think the 30, like, graphics mode looks good. Like, I think the game looks good. The 30 is very smooth. Like, I don't notice any drops or anything. Like, you know, usually it takes a second for my eyes to adjust to 30 again. But for this game, I thought it looks great, 30. I'm not just coping. I do think it does look pretty good, 30. And, you know, I guess another negative is, like, the graphics. Because sometimes the game looks fucking incredible. Like, some of the major locations look really, really good. Like really next-gen stuff. But then some areas do look pretty, like PS4 looking. Like, some of the rocks look pretty bad. Some of the textures are very blurry sometimes. Honestly, it's kind of an issue the first remake had, where like some things look really good and other things just look like kind of bland or whatever. I don't feel like it's as bad as remake was, but there's still some parts of the game where it looks kind of inconsistent graphically. But I think overall the game is really beautiful. So those are really all my cons. Everything else I think is like positives. Like, I think the story so far is like, you know, right now it's following pretty faithfully of the original Seven. You know, you're going through all the locations you went through in the middle part of the game. Obviously, they interject the new remake stuff, which does scare me, because I'm like, they could do weird shit. And I basically heard nothing good about the ending. Like, basically, everyone think the ending is kind of mid or bad. So that's going to be fun when I get to it. But right now, I think the story is fun. I really like how all the characters are interacting with each other. You just get a lot more moments with them, just because obviously the game is like a lot longer and you can just do more than a PS1 game. But even then, even in the PS1 game, I thought all these characters were really fleshed out. And this remake series has been doing such a good job with all the characters. Like, I love all their personalities. I love seeing them interact with other characters that you haven't really seen them interact with before in the original game. So that stuff is great. The combat is still one of my favorites in any action RPG. You know, I've already said this about Remake, and it's basically kind of unchanged in this game, which is great. Like, that's kind of what I was hoping for. Another thing they added is the new synergy attacks, synergy abilities and skills. So they added this in the PS5 upgrade for Remake in their little DLC with Yuffie. But basically, if you hold the block button, you could press any of the face buttons and you're able to do synergy skills with other characters. And that's really good because they're strong and they don't use any magic points or whatever. You could just use them whenever. And they're really fun because it gets you to use the other characters while just switching to them all the time, which is great. And then you have synergy abilities, which are just like team up attacks you can do with your party members after you use a certain amount of ATB abilities, which is also fun because it's just like you have like a bunch of big moves you could do now. You have limit break, synergy abilities. The combat system is very fun. It's also like a lot harder, I feel. Like I was getting my ass kicked a bit in the beginning of the game, but that is because they give you a lot more tools now to like deal with like any threat. So I think the increase in difficulty is pretty nice, because, you know, I also kind of expect you to play Remake at this point. I don't know why you would not play Remake before this. It's like a direct sequel. So yeah, I feel like the combat is still just as good as ever. Love all the boss fights, everything about it, so good. And the next big thing is the open world. So this is new to this game. You know, the first Remake part was very restrictive. You were just in Midgard the whole game. Very narrow passages. You know, it was very brown and gray. Like, it was still good. Like, you know, I still really, I really enjoyed the first Remake. But, you know, Midgard did kind of overstay its welcome, I think, by the end of the game. Luckily, that game was shorter. It was like, I think, 40 hours to do everything. So it was kind of shorter compared to this game's like 100-something hours. But, you know, all the different areas you go to are very different. They're fun to explore. You have like the grasslands, and you have the more desert-y areas. Then you have like more like rocks and shit, you know, like I think all the areas you explore are really cool, all have very iconic locations from the original game. And in terms of the actual content you do in the open world, I think it's actually really fun. You know, I played my share of open world games at this point, and I know some people get really tired of the Ubisoft towers. You know, I know people are like, oh, Ubisoft towers are bad, but, and this game has them too, but I feel like the activities you do in those markers, you know, all those map markers are a lot more fun than the typical Ubisoft thing, right? So usually side quests would lead to more interesting character moments, some fun side objective, and a lot of them lead to like mini games and shit. And this game loves its fucking mini games. There's a lot of them. And I feel like each activity you do in the open world really feels like it's worth your time, at least to me anyway. I know some people are going to feel like, oh, you're still clearing out map markers or whatever, but I feel like the content they added to the open world has been really worth my time. And it really feels like time just slips away when I play this game. Like it's just so many different objectives, so much variety in the stuff you do. Like I never get tired of it. When I get into a fight, it feels great. When I do a mini game, it's like something new, so I don't really feel too burnt out from playing the game for so long. Like I think it really balances all that stuff really well, which is important for an open world game. Like I think having a nice bit of variety in the objectives you do is great, because even things like, you know, Ghost of Tsushima or Horizon Zero Dawn, like, you know, you're like clearing a lot of camps, right? Like you're clearing a lot of camps and shit, and it could feel a little monotonous towards like the middle of the game. For this game, I don't feel that, because there's no enemy camps or anything. There is like combat challenges, but that's what they are. Like they ask you to do different things, and it changes each encounter you do. There's only like some objectives that's very like, oh, touch a thing and then you get the collectible or whatever. But a lot of time, the variety is really nice. And I guess that gets into the next major point of the game is the minigames. Like I said, there's a shit ton of minigames. And for some people, you know, this is a negative. I kind of like it. I'm not like the biggest fan of minigames, like being everywhere in a game. But I feel like the longer a game is probably better, because, you know, the game is long. So it has more time to focus on its major gameplay things, which is like the combat. But if a game is, you know, shorter, then you won't really feel that. Like you just feel like, oh, too many mini games are like cutting into the gameplay. Like there's a really random comparison, but Ratchet and Clank Size Matters is a big example of that, where there's like two Ratchet levels in that game, is everything else is mini games, and that's too much. This game is longer, so you're able to still have your nice bit of combat encounters plus all the variety in the mini games. And I think they're a lot of fun. Like, some of them are annoying, yeah. But I think a lot of them are a good time. Like, Chocobo Racing is, like, just Mario Kart 8, and it's, like, a lot of fun. The new card game they added, Queen's Blood, is honestly a lot of fun. Like, it's a really fun card game, and it might be my favorite out of the ones they added in Final Fantasy. Like, Triple Triad is probably the most famous one, but I think this one clears it. I really like Queen's Blood a lot. And yeah, just all the minigames, I think, add a nice variety to the main story and to all the side content you do. So I never feel bored playing the game. And I guess, like, lastly, just, like, the music and stuff. Like, yeah, the music is fucking fantastic as well. Like, they do such a good job with the dynamic music in this game, where it would switch themes based on where you are. Even in the same general region of the map you're in, it would change themes depending on, like, exactly where you are. The combat battle music, like, transitions perfectly from the overworld music. Just all that shit is really good. So yeah, overall, just enjoying the hell out of this game. It's so goofy. Like it knows it's dumb. It has its serious moments, but when it gets wacky, it gets really wacky, and I love that. Like, I love Final Fantasy 16 a lot, but like all the silly moments in this game and seeing it in HD is just crazy. The game is wacky. That's all I'm gonna say. The game is full of anime shenanigans, and I love it. And yeah, the game just makes me happy. It's just really, really, really good. So we'll see how I feel after I beat it with the ending, because yeah, I know the ending is like really controversial. Mm-hmm. But I've been loving it. Fucking fantastic game. So yeah.
Okay. But as someone who has never played Final Fantasy, any of them, but I want to get into 7. Like,
yeah,
should I play the original and then get into the remakes, obviously? Okay. And like, yeah, so how should I play the original 7? Because I know there's like 20 different versions out there for it.
Okay. So like, yeah, definitely. These games work a lot like Scott Pilgrim Takeoff, right? Like, this is, it wants you to use your knowledge of the original game to enhance it. Like, they're basically okay. Like weird pseudo sequels. Same thing with the Evangelion movies. Like, they're like the same thing, where they're like, they start as a remake, but they really aren't. They're like weird sequels. So I definitely would say play the original 7 if you could like do it. and then play Remake 1 and 2. Like, that's basically all you have to do. Like, you could play Crisis Core, and you could watch Advent Children, but you really don't have to. Like, you don't have to do any of that. Like, Crisis Core maybe is a little more important than Advent Children was, but you don't have to do that. I think if anyone wants to play the Remake trilogy, that, you know, it's going to be a trilogy, play the original game, and then you will appreciate Remake 1 and Rebirth more. Because I've seen some people that are just really confused with things that happen in Remake and Rebirth, because it really wants you to play the original, at least have some knowledge of the original game. So that's really the only sort of like negative about this remake style, is that it's not really a remake. It's like weird remake sequels. So just keep that in mind if you do want to play the remake games, because I do think the original 7 is like, you should play that before these. But that's just my opinion. Some people might tell you differently, but I definitely think you should play the original 7 to fully appreciate Remake. So yeah.
All right, cool. All
right, so next we have two more games here that we both have played. I want to play more of these before Rebirth came out, but you know, time. So first is Mario versus Donkey Kong. You know, and you know, there's not too much to say about this. This is a remake of a GBA game where it kind of takes sort of like the gameplay style of, you know, Mario and Donkey Kong, you know, like the arcade game. But, you know, it makes them into levels, and Mario has like a bigger moveset and stuff. And honestly, it's a lot of fun. You know, I think for, you know, I bought it for a cheaper price. And I think if you could get it for $30, I think that's a perfect price for it. Because, yeah, it's just a really fun puzzle platformer. You know, you go through the stage, you collect the presents if you want 100%. You collect the keys and you go on to the next stage. But what I really like about this game is the fact that Mario has like movement. Like, he's not just like, he can't just do like, he has a basic jump, but he goes to do like a handstand and get like a bigger jump. He has like a, I think he has a triple jump in this game as well. Yeah. Or at least a double jump. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you could like skip a lot of parts of the stages by doing some clever platforming. And I like that a lot about this game.
Yeah, I mean, this is a very faithful remake. You know, I would say that, you know, when it comes to Nintendo remakes, especially, like, they take a lot of time and effort into making sure that, like, the consumer is getting, like, a full package kind of thing. And you know what? They chopped off $10. They made it $50. And I think that that's, like, a fair price. You know, obviously getting it cheaper is a lot better. But if you are, like, a completionist and you're trying to complete this game 100%, there's a lot of stuff that you could do. Like, I didn't even touch any of, like, the Plus World stuff, which is what you unlock after you finish the game, which is pretty much you replaying the game all over again, just with harder levels, the same aesthetics, and all this other stuff. So, yeah, I mean, it's a great remake. I think that if you've never played the Mario vs. Donkey Kong series before, check this one out. Obviously, there's like a bunch of them on like the DS and whatnot, and some of them are like, you can't even play them anymore because of the eShop, you know, sort of shut down. But I think for this game in particular, it's very good. I definitely recommend it at full price. But, you know, if you want to wait for price drop or get it on sale or whatever, do that.
Yeah, it's a good game. You know, I mean, you can still tell it's like, you know, more of like a budget game because there's a lot of reused assets and shit. Mm-hmm. Like, but you know, it's a good time. Like, you get what you get, right? Like, you're not expecting like Odyssey out of this, right? And yeah, I think it's a pretty fun game. I do want to play more of it. You know, it's pretty nice and short, you know, compared to all the other things I've been playing recently. So yeah, it's a good time. And secondly, is a game we were both pretty you know, excited for, was this Penny's Big Breakaway.
I only got up to Mr. Q, which I got to last night, so.
I think I'm a world ahead of you. I think.
Okay.
So I think I remember fighting him, and I think I'm on the next world. So yeah, if you don't know what this is a 3D platformer by the people who made Sonic Mania, and it really goes to that sort of Sega Saturn sort of aesthetic. The game is very movement based still, so you know, if you're a fan of Sonic, it's a lot of momentum based platforming, a lot of like speed and try to do stuff fast. And I think the game is great. Like, you know, the movement of the yo-yo and how they use those mechanics is very fun. You know, it's pretty simple to understand, but also very complex to fully master. I fuck up my movement a lot in this game, but I think that's a great sign of a good 3D platformer. Like, you want it to be easy to understand, but also, like, pretty hard to master. So it feels great to, like, zoom through levels, like, effortlessly and stuff. So, and the game, you know, does that very well. You know, I think all the levels are a lot of fun. They make full use of Penny's moveset, being able to sort of like you could like kind of grapple in the air, you could do a dash, you could do like this weird, not like a double jump, but you kind of like hover in the air for a second and then like keep going. So there's a lot of things you could do. And the game keeps itself being not too stale, just pure platforming, but having some power-ups and stuff. You could have like this wrecking ball yo-yo thing. You could have like a speed booster yo-yo. Like there's a lot of different power-ups you could get as well. And yeah, I think the game is just really fun. Just pure 3D platforming. And, you know, that's something we don't get too often nowadays, you know?
Yeah, I mean, this is their first ever 3D platformer and their first ever original game ever. So, you know, I'm going to be a little light on them. But yeah, I mean, Damien's right. This is like a very good game. It's $30. So that is like a premium price for like an indie game, in my opinion.
It's expensive for an indie game, yeah.
Yeah, but even then, like the presentation in and of itself is like fantastic. Like it is so colorful, so beautiful. Like I just really like seeing games like this that just look like that, obviously. And then gameplay wise, like you said, it is very easy to like understand and sort of get like how to use the movement abilities and whatnot, but to actually like be good at it is like a completely different story, because I'm just like falling off, I'm like doing like the wrong inputs because I think I want to do this move but then I do another move. So yeah, I mean, I think that one of my problems with this game is the end sequence. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's a skill issue or whatever. But anytime there's like a like analog movement, I try to do it and then it fucks up instantly.
Okay. So I was also fucking those up all the time. Mm-hmm. I think you're supposed to use the right stick.
That's what I was thinking too. Like after I finished playing last night, I was like, am I supposed to use the right stick?
Yeah,
like,
I think this is weird. Because the moment I switched to the right stick, I just was able to do it every single time. I kept using the left stick. So I'm pretty sure it's the right stick because that's the yo-yo stick, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I also was using the left stick for so long. I'm like, why is this so hard? I'm like, what's going on? Like, I don't think I'm messing up these inputs that much. But yeah, I think you're supposed to use the right stick. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Because I guess maybe we skipped a prompt or maybe something just wasn't told to us. But I was just like, man, I'm like fucking these up every single time. Is this like a skill issue or something? I don't know. But yeah, I mean, just like by what I've played so far, which is only up to the second boss, which is Mr. Q. Fuck him. I hate his final stage because it's like he has three balls, but I can't get all three in. I have to wait and go through another cycle. And then when you have to go and hit his eye when it comes back, you have to like turn a little bit. And if you turn a little too much or not enough, you're gonna get hit by it, and it's really annoying. But yeah, I mean, I like the way that this game sort of presents itself, obviously, and also just how the gameplay is done as well. Like, they have, like, this combo system with the points, which is sort of, like, a step towards the completionist bonus, and then you also have these other things that you can look out for, like the generic coin, or I guess it's, like, a bolt that you're looking for.
Yeah, it's a collectible, yeah.
Yeah, and then there's also, like, mini side quests that you could do within the level also, which, like, some of them you probably can't do on your first try. I feel like this game in particular, this is like a key example of like a 3D platformer that you cannot just like go through 100% your first run through, which is like a good and bad thing depending on how you look at it. I think that that's a good thing because it just shows that like the amount of layers and sort of how difficult that this game can be. But yeah, I mean, I am enjoying my time so far. Obviously, we are not done with it, but I'm definitely looking forward to playing more of this. And, you know, for their first 3D platformer, it's good. I think my first 16 minutes and I ran into my first glitch where Penny got stuck on like a ledge and I just couldn't move.
Yeah, but I did. That happened to me too.
It is what it is. You know, it is, like I said, their first game. So I'm going to give them a little bit of slack, but, you know, so far so good. I think that the story is pretty wacky and pretty creative as well. But yeah.
Yeah, I, you know, I've been reading, I think, I don't know if the PC port has more issues because I'm playing on PS5, but I heard there was more collision issues in, like, that version. We've only ran into the same bug, it looks like, where, I was spinning around and then got stuck in the floor, and that was it. But I haven't encountered any other bugs besides that, but I heard, you know, your mileage may vary on collision issues because I heard that's, like, a big problem with the game right now. But, so far I've been really enjoying it as well.
And also, I guess, like, when you get caught or when you die, like, you're supposed to see, like, Penny do, like, a animation, but it's, like, half of her. I don't know what's going on there, but I'm going to just, like, ignore that.
I think it's getting blocked by the other enemy models or something, like, in front of her. So, like, it just kind of, like, blocks her model, and it looks weird.
It looks funny, but I don't pay too much attention to it. But, so far, so good. Obviously, like we said, it's a premium price for a indie game. So, you know, just watch a lot of videos, check out other people's opinions on it before you lay down that $30. But Moving on from there, I got free code to check out Arzet, the Jewel of Faramore. If you guys don't know what this game is, this is a Zelda CDI inspired game, and it looks very much like that. It's just using its own characters, its own world. And the reason why it looks like that is because the developer CDI Software, you see what they did there?
Yeah, I see it.
They remade those two Zelda CDI games on PC, and that was up in, I think, like 2020, and it was only available online for like 48 hours or something on like Google Drive before the developer took it down. So, you know what, understandable there before, you know, Nintendo finds out and, you know, takes legal action. But I'm sure if you dig enough online, you could hopefully find a, you know, non-virus file out there if you really want to play those remakes. But this game in particular, it is very fun. I am not familiar with these Zelda CDI games. All I know is that they're really bad, and they're obviously known for like those really crusty and really weird cutscenes, which the game keeps those. They keep it on purpose. So the voice acting is very bad, but I think that's part of the charm as well. I really like when the cutscenes happen because it's just like, how messed up can they make this look? And how is this character going to sound like? Because some of the characters, I'm just like, I wouldn't expect a wolf to sound like that. Or like, I wouldn't expect this character to sound like that. But it's a lot of fun. The gameplay is very, very good. I was surprised by how much I honestly enjoyed the game because it's very much like a Metroidvania game. Like, you have to go through the level once. You're going to see, like, a lot of things that you can't, like, access or whatever. And then you go to the next level or whatever the case is, get more items, and then you could go back and unlock those paths. And you're going to be playing the same levels over and over again a lot if you want to get everything and make sure that Arzet is a lot stronger. Because once I was, like, I would say, like, 3 hours in, that's when like I started to get like really strong, and I feel like most people could probably finish the game within 3 hours. It took me 4 because, you know, I guess I'm a little more slow and a little more stupid when it comes to games like this, because you really have to like look around to like make sure that you get everything. Because early on I missed a hole in the wall that was cracked and had sparkles on it, and I was like, how did I miss that shit? So I got stuck and I had to like look it up real quick, be like, what the fuck am I missing? And I was like, I'm so stupid, it's literally right in front of me. But I mean, it's a lot of fun. It's only $20. So like, if you want to play like a pretty good, like 3 to 4 hour, like 2D platformer with Metroidvania elements and has like that CDI aesthetic, check this game out. I mean, you know, they aren't paying me to say this. It's just like my genuine thoughts on it. Obviously I got the game for free, but I feel like $20 is like the perfect price for a game like this. I'm not sure if they're going to make sequels to Arzet or whatever this studio is going to do, because this is their first like official game. So I'm eager to see what else that they're going to do for this game or their future titles.
That's good to hear, because my interest has been piqued with this game when I first saw it. I don't know if it was an indie world or what, and I've seen a lot of clips in the last like week about like just all the cutscenes being like, you know, crusty as hell, because I love those CGI cutscenes. But I wasn't sure about the gameplay. Like, I didn't know if the gameplay was actually good or not. So you saying that, I'm like, I'm probably gonna pick it up, because I'm seeing this, I'm like, this is great. Like, you know, it's so stupid. I love the CDI games, like, because they're bad. So that's good. Honestly, the next game should be like a Hotel Mario, like, knockoff. Like, that'd be really funny if they did that. So that's good, though. That's good to hear, because I wasn't really sure about how the gameplay actually was. So it being like pretty good and it being only like 4 hours, like, that sounds good. So
yeah, it's not too long. It doesn't overstay. It's welcome. You know, my only downside with the gameplay is like the bosses. The bosses aren't like that big of a deal. I feel like. Right. Especially towards the end when you get like a bunch of upgrades, like you're gonna like fly through the bosses no problem. But the levels and sort of exploring and sort of like that Metroidvania stuff, it's all a lot of fun.
Sounds good.
Next things I've been doing, I saw Dune 2, obviously. Cinema, honestly, like straight up, like this is like my favorite movie of the year so far. Like Dune 2 really surprised me. Like I only watched the first Dune like I think a few podcasts ago. Shout out to my friend Chris for really, you know, making me watch that. But you know, when I saw Dune 2 in IMAX especially, I was like, man, this shit is like fucking amazing. And obviously, like, you need to watch Dune 1. It's on Max if you want to see that first before you go into the theaters to watch Dune 2, because everyone's fucking talking about Dune 2. Like, this has honestly been like a movie that everyone is sort of talking about and raving, because it has really gone through, I guess, like pop culture just because of like its star cast and sort of like the actual quality of the movie. Like, literally in the third half, like, I just had my hands on my head during the whole time, because I was just like, what the fuck is happening? Like, this movie is like so crazy. It's so goddamn good. If you can't see it in IMAX and if you can't afford it, go watch it in IMAX. It is 100% worth it. It was just a lot of fun, especially seeing it, I guess, like opening week. I was just like, man, Like, this is what I go to the movies for, is to watch movies like Dune 2.
Cinema.
Yes, exactly. It is. I'm definitely gonna have to see it again, because it was honestly that good.
Yeah, I should watch it. Like, I feel like it'll be up my alley, Dune 1 and 2, so I really should get on that.
Dune 1 is definitely, like, much more of, like, a slow burner. I feel like Dune 2, because everything's, like, established already, they're able to sort of talk about or sort of develop the story a lot faster. They just get to, like, sort of action sequences and sort of, like, set pieces like that. So, yeah, you know, not to say that Dune 1 is, like, a boring movie whatsoever, you know, but, you know, Dune 2 is just, like, what a sequel should do is just be bigger, better, and just be a lot more crazy. Something that is not so good is Avatar Netflix. I only watched the first three episodes, so I can't necessarily review the season. They have renewed it for season 2 and 3.
Yep.
But I have heard some things about season 1, such as Aang did not learn water by the end of the season,
no,
which I think
not,
is
apparently
stupid. But just judging by these first three episodes and sort of how they're adapting the Avatar cartoon and sort of how they're piecing it all together, how they're chopping things out to make it a lot faster pace. And I'm just like, you know, like, it looks good. I'll be honest, like, the sort of, like, production values and sort of, like, the costumes and the sort of set pieces, the environments, everything like that. Like, it looks good. Like, I'm not going to deny that. But I think one thing that I was obviously, like, worried the most is, like, how is the emotional beats and sort of how is the story going to hit the same? And it just hasn't. Like, I guess probably because I've gotten into this where I'm just like, this is not going to be good. And I've tried to, like, go into it with a much more open mind and sort of be like, okay, like, I'll try to, like, take in this show and sort of see how they're changing things up and sort of doing it that way. But if a lot of it just feels rushed. Like, I don't feel like these versions of Sokka, Katara, and Aang are sort of, like, besties or anything. Obviously, like, they weren't, like, bestest of friends at the start, but, you know, like, they had, like, this sort of, like, I guess, joint effort and this sort of camaraderie between each other. Like, obviously, like, Sokka fucking hated Aang at the start, and then, like, you know, he sort of warmed up to him more as the season went along. But I feel like a lot of it, like I said, being rushed, it's not sort of taking its time to sort of develop these characters. And I guess that's why the original creators left so long ago, because they were just like, we don't like what the fuck you guys are doing here. There are some things that I'm just like, okay, so the Fire Nation, they literally just, like, burn people alive. Like, they just engulf them in flames. And I'm just like, okay, like, that's pretty hardcore. Kind of cool at the same time, but I'm just like, okay, I guess, you know, because Avatar's always been, like, I guess, like, a kid's cartoon, if you will.
Yeah.
So seeing that within, like, this live action series, I'm just like, okay, yeah, I guess that's fine. And then certain other things, like the way that they piece certain things together, like the first time we see Aang is during that whole flashback sequence with him at the temple, and I'm just like, I don't like that we're seeing that first. I really do like how the original show paced everything, because it felt like it was all purposeful, you know, because, like, we see, you know, because when Katara and Sokka find Aang, that's the first time we see Aang as the viewer. But now that we saw all of his backstory, I'm just like, that sense of discovery is just not there, and it just feels like a lot of that magic is just lost. I mean, obviously, I've only watched the first three episodes, so I can't really speak on the whole series, but a lot of it just feels missing.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what I've been hearing about in general, just, like, the show, like, just doesn't feel as whimsical or magical as the original mm-hmm. did. I actually watched Mother's Basement's, like, video on, like, sort of Netflix, so I won't, like, mm-hmm. you know, I won't regurgitate his opinion, because it's not my opinion, I didn't watch it. But it does seem like, you know, a big problem is cutting the filler. Like, yeah, like, some of the filler wasn't great. Like, Great Divide, you know, we all know, like, that stuff wasn't, like, that great. But I still feel like it was important to, like, you know, for character development and to show that Aang is, like, a kid. Because apparently mm-hmm. in this one, he's, like, very duty-bound. Like, he's very, like, no, I am the Avatar. This is my mission. Like, he wasn't like that in the original. He was just, yeah, like, a kid that just wanted to goof off and shit. So, mm-hmm. and, you know, obviously the Sokka stuff I've been hearing about with, like, this is kind of, like, he's just kind of like a guy now. Like, he doesn't really have too much of a character arc to go through. So when you kind of, like, do that, it's kind of like, well, you're kind of just dealing with just characters that are just kind of going through the motions or just rushing to get through the plot. Mm-hmm. Which I guess makes sense in terms, like, of a bigger budget show, because, you know, you don't have to waste as much money doing stupid filler stuff, or, you know, you don't have to spend as much money doing all these other episodes to, like, you know, get the characters to where they have to be. He's just like, all right, we can move along to the plot. Just move the plot along. And I feel like mm-hmm. A lot of shows are having that issue now where they want to just keep moving the plot while having the time to breathe now, you know?
Yeah, because I think the last episode I watched was they fused Jet, like, introducing Jet.
Yeah, I heard about that.
And
yeah,
along with the sort of, like, air temp or the sort of flying kids or whatever, I forget exactly, what that storyline was, but they fused those together, and I didn't notice it at first until like I guess like the climax. Maybe I'm just fucking stupid, but I was just like, okay, wait, what? Like, why are we mixing these together? Because I feel like Jet flooding like a whole fucking town was a lot more impactful in the show than like him like trying to bomb one person, which like, you know, it's still like extreme to be fair, but at the same time I'm just like, I don't know if that fits. And then like Zuko was there too, and I'm just like, I don't know if that fits either. Like, I don't know, it just seems like that they're just putting things together and rearranging stuff that doesn't need to be rearranged. And then again, you could also see that this Netflix show doesn't need to be here as well. Like, making this entire live action thing just wasn't necessary, wasn't needed. And yeah, you know, just by how they're executing it, like, what would I want from a live action Avatar series is obviously like have that same sort of whimsical fun. Maybe it's the fucking nostalgia talking here, but you know, just like have these characters be themselves and not sort of change them so dramatically. And you know, just have the Avatar show be an Avatar show. I don't know exactly what I'm trying to get out here, but
I just want the next animated thing. Like, that's kind of just all I really care about. Like, I know they're making the movie about when they're all grown up and stuff, so mm-hmm. like give me that, give me the next, like, whatever the next Avatar full series is going to be, and that's when I'll be excited. So
yeah, and hopefully, you know, I know people like Korra, but I think that
I like one of Korra.
The biggest downsides of Korra is that, like, it was supposed to be a one-off thing.
Yes,
so yeah. Then season one feels very self-contained, and then they were like, oh, we got three more seasons. And then they was like, okay, how do we stretch this out? And then it you could just see, like, the sort of cracks in the wall, if you will. But, yeah.
It is, yeah, I feel it is. Like Korra's problems are more, like, just, like, Nickelodeon being, like, weird about it. It's just like, oh, we'll order one season and then we'll order more seasons, and then they kept doing that even though they're like, no, we need to like plan this out, like it doesn't work like that with this series. But Nickelodeon's like, oh, it's a cartoon, like who cares, like just like do whatever. So I think Korra got a lot of issues with that. Obviously there's like more problems with Korra, but I think overall I think it's still pretty good. I think people hate Korra a little too much, like I think it's pretty good. But yeah,
but yeah, that is that. So let's get into the news of things. So first up, we're going to start with the very, very sad shit that's been happening within the games industry that Jeff Keighley seems to be dodging for whatever goddamn reason. But we're not going to talk about that side of the story. But pretty much there have been massive layoffs amongst a lot of game studios, including PlayStation, Deck 9, EA, and Supermassive. So they've let go, you know, at this point, collectively, they've all let go of like thousands of people at this point that don't have jobs, that have worked within the games industry, whether it was, you know, less than a year or even a few years under their belt. You know, they were let go regardless of what was going on. So I mean, it just seems like that the games industry and the games sort of, I guess, yeah, industry is just like imploding in and of itself. I don't know exactly what's happening behind the scenes, because you know, Insomniac Games, they had a massive success with Spider-Man 2, even though it wasn't like critically acclaimed. You know, it didn't win anything at the Game Awards or whatever, but who fucking cares about that? You know, it made millions of dollars. Like, it sold so many copies, and it is Insomniac's most successful game because it is Spider-Man and because people were really looking forward to this. And even them, they were hit with the layoffs, and it sucks to see. I hope that everyone that was affected by this sort of gets back on their feet, and it seems like, you know, moving forward, I guess games studios need to sort of watch what they're spending their money into and sort of who they're allocating these jobs for, because you can't just like hire these people and have them in your system and then let them go after, you know, less than a year or even a couple years down the road.
Yeah, I think it's mostly just because like AAA games are just costing way too much money now. Like, they cost so much money. It's kind of the same problem we see with a lot of like big Hollywood movies, where, you know, even things like the Marvels cost like way too much money for what it was, you know. Mm-hmm. like same thing goes with games. Like, games are costing way too much money, and you have to sell more and more and more copies. But the problem with games is you also have to sell the consoles, you know. Mm-hmm. And I feel like PlayStation, I could really only speak for PlayStation's layoffs here, because, you know, it makes sense in my mind. You know, they wanted to do this big live service push, but that ended up like exploding in their face, because, you know, Naughty Dog canceled their Last of Us 1. We've seen many cancellations of all their live service games. Like, this Twisted Metal thing was supposed to be a live service thing. They mm-hmm. canceled that as well. So they definitely don't see like the future in this anymore, and they want to just move away from it. But that was a very costly investment they made, and it ended up hurting almost every studio that they had. You know, Jim Ryan really wanted this to happen, and it just did not fucking happen. So that's probably why we see so many layoffs across the board for all the Sony studios, because you know, that was a big investment. You know, like even them buying Bungie was like a huge investment that's not paying off at all. Like Bungie's just bleeding them dry for money at the moment. So you know, PlayStation is kind of just in turmoil at the moment, and it doubly doesn't help that they can't really sell PS5s if they don't have exclusives, which we talked about last podcast. And they can't really make exclusives because all those people were making live service type games. Like the only people that weren't doing that was like a Soniac and probably Sucker Punch. I guess we'll see what they're doing, like probably Ghost 2. But you know, right now all the studios have just been kind of like stuck in a rut this generation, just because they were like determined to have this weird live service push, and now that shit's over, because yeah, you can't just have like 50 live service games going on at once. It just doesn't work like that. So yeah, that probably does explain why their studios are getting impacted really hard here. But of course, just gaming in general has been kind of a free fall in terms of AAA marketing. Like, you know, Supermassive lost a lot of people, Deck 9 as well, which is sad. It makes a bit more sense with Deck 9 too, because they make also like mid-budget games. Like I know the game they just released. Oh no, wait, no, that's Don't Nod. Deck 9 is the other one. Sorry, yeah. I get them confused all the time.
Nah, it's
Deck,
okay.
But Deck 9, I think they made True Colors, but I don't think True Colors sold as well as they wanted it to either. And they've kind of just been like, you know. Also, I are they owned by Square? I forget. I always get Don't Nod and them confused. I don't think they're owned by Square. They owned IP for Life is Strange, sorry. But either way, it's still really sad to see. And this kind of brings up a point of like why we don't see Japanese studios going through the same thing all these Western studios are going through. And I think that's just because Japanese games, I think, just know how budget their game is better, honestly. Like, you know, the games maybe don't look as good, but they also like come out a lot more frequently. They never lay off workers from what I've seen. And when you have a bunch of strong leadership and veteran workers, you make really strong games. They're able to build up on top of sequels and, you know, be better, right? Like from 7 Remake, I'm just gonna bring up, you know, 7 because I was just talking about it. From 7 Remake to Rebirth, they really, you know, kept adding on to that formula to make it better. And I'm sure the third game is going to be even better because they have all the crew from those older games. Super Mario Wonder as well was a full of veteran people that made like games from like Mario World, like Super Mario World, you know, like they just don't lay off people. And that's good to like get that experience and like that knowledge of that certain series that I feel like Western studios just don't have that. I feel like once they make a AAA game, all their asses are out. Like Last of Us Part 2, so many people just left after that project because it was so grueling and stuff, you know? And I guess it's just different work cultures too. I mean, Japan has a pretty brutal work culture as well, but I feel like they're kind of built different, I guess, so they can deal with it. For us, you know, we also have a brutal work culture, but we have like no loyalty. We just kind of just lay off people without second thoughts. And, you know, it's starting to bite people in the ass, you know? Like now look at this. Like we're laying off so many people, then what's left, you know? We're just going to have a bunch of corporate suits like making these series. I have no idea what it is to make a game. So yeah, these layoffs suck for literally everything, and it's been terrible. The one that makes me the most sad is that canceled Respawn a Star Wars FPS game. It was supposed to be like a Mandalorian type game. You're supposed to get bounties and shit. I'm like, bro, why did I cancel the coolest games ever? Like, why?
So, yeah, it just seems like, especially that game in particular, like they announced it not even like 3 months ago, and it's already canceled. So,
yeah.
You know, the games industry is literally like just imploding on itself, and it seems like that the Western front of things need to really like figure out like what the hell are we doing, guys? Like, what are we going to do to make sure that we can sustain the industry, to make sure that we are still making games, being profitable, and all this other stuff? Because, like you said, with the whole, I guess, like Japanese side of things, you know, Capcom, they announced that they are increasing their salaries by 5% all around and 28% rise for new graduate hires. So, yeah, I mean, Capcom, Nintendo, you know, those people that are on that side of the world, they are doing sort of, I guess, fine, and they're sort of being okay with it, sort of how they work around their games and everything like that. So, yeah, you know, hopefully that everything just, you know, gets better this year later on, because, you know, we're still only in March, surprisingly. Yeah. But yeah, I just hope that all of these people that were affected by this are able to come out even better and hopefully find a new home sooner rather than later.
Yeah, hopefully we stop bleeding talent, because that's really bad.
So, yeah, because then if you see all of these, I guess, like veterans, it's like, all right, well, how is this newbie supposed to get into the games industry and sort of feel motivated to actually work in it, you know?
Well, speaking of that, also people affected by the layoffs, which we're going to talk about right now, is Toys for Bob. So they also got hit by the big layoffs last time with Activision, you know, the whole Blizzard, Microsoft stuff. They lost like a bunch of people. And in a crazy turn of events, they're going to Indy, which I didn't know you could do. So they just like said, fuck this. We're leaving both Activision and Microsoft later, and they're going to Indy. So they're fully independent now. You know, they're saying they want to make some new IPs, but they're also down to keep working with Activision and Microsoft. They need their like talents for stuff, which I'm assuming that's going to be Spyro, because it says, so keep your horns on. I'm like, I guess they, because there was rumors they were developing like a Spyro 4. So that's probably still happening if they're going to continue doing that. But it's cool to see them go indie. You know, they're not stuck in the Call of Duty mines anymore. They don't know how to help with that. They could do their own original IPs and all that, which is great. You know, I think Toys for Bob, you know, they've done a great job with Spyro Reignited. They did a great job with Crash 4. You know, I know people were mixed about the what do we call that? Crash Team Rumble or whatever.
Yeah.
not shutting down as well, but you know, they had a good run with those characters. I'm happy to see them either continue or do their own thing, because they're a good studio. I really like their game. So hopefully they could continue being indie and it doesn't like end up biting them. I think either way, it was risky for them to be with Microsoft and Activision and stuff. And I also think it's risky for them to be indie, but I think indie is better for their own self, like, you know, mental health as well. Yeah. So, yeah.
Because now they could only worry about who's actually at Toys for Bob, and they don't have to worry about pleasing Microsoft and Activision and everything like that. But
yeah.
Yeah. Like you said, you know, what they've done with Crash 4 and the Spyro Reignited trilogy have been really, really good work. I haven't played the Spyro trilogy yet, but, you know, Crash 4, I think that was like a really solid follow up to the original Crash trilogy, even though it was one hell of a game to 100% and get all the collectibles. But, you know, if they're going indie and they are, you know, still developing this supposed Spyro 4 game, I'm all for it. But, you know, I'm excited to see what they're able to do on their own and maybe see what other projects come to their office.
Hell yeah.
All right. So next thing we got here is the first look at the TMNT Mutants Unleashed. This is a exclusive to Game Informer, and we got some images to coincide with this $40 tie-in movie game. So, yeah, I mean, we are long beyond sort of removed from that era of like when a movie comes out or like when a show is popular, you know, we would get like a really bad, cheesy tie-in game. So for this one to come out and sort of be like a pseudo sequel to the movie and sort of tie it into that, I'm all for it. You know, it's only going to be $40. So obviously, like, they know that a lot of people are going to sort of be aware if they were trying to charge like $60 or even $50, that it would be a hard sell. I think that $40 across the board for like pretty much every single platform is going to be great. It seems like it's going to be a cooperative sort of beat 'em up game. And you know what? That sounds cool with me. You know, that's all you need to make for a Ninja Turtles game, especially one that's going to be like a loose tie-in to a project. You know, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been a while since we had like a 3D Turtles game. I think the last one was the Platinum game, and that one was like bad. this one reminds me a lot of the Xbox one, the 2003 Turtles were in. Mm-hmm. Like, that was fun. And it's kind of cool to kind of sort of like attempting the art style from the movie as well. And I think it looks pretty good for what it is. You know, it's a budget game. It's $40. Some people put a lot of pressure on these games to be as good as they can. But you also got to keep in mind they're budget games, and they're still like tie-in games. But you know, like you said, we're pretty far removed from that era of like gaming from like the PS2, PS3 age where those games were always bad. So I think that's a decent chance to be pretty good. You know, still be cautious about it. You know, wait for what people are saying. But yeah, it does look nice. It is cool to try to emulate the art style, and hopefully the gameplay is fun enough. So that's really all you can ask for with these type of games. And yeah, just don't expect like the world from it. So yeah.
I'm sure people are expecting the world from the last Ronin game, which is understandable.
That's a bit more fair. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But you know, this is something that, you know, a little more low key, a little more fun. So yeah, excited to see that one come out.
All right, so Ghost of Tsushima Director's Cut is finally coming to PC on May 16th. So people have been asking this for fucking ever, and I'm surprised it took so long. This kind of like furthers my like conspiracy brain that Ghost 2 is going to be announced this year, like 100%. Like I feel like it's been a while since this game came out, and like Sucker Punch has been cooking something. So I definitely feel like it's time for Ghost 2. Maybe not this year it comes out, but next year, that'll be pretty sick. Actually, we already know it's not this year because Sony's like, we don't have shit this year. So yeah, hopefully next year Ghost 2 comes out. But this is a great game. I'm happy PC players are able to experience it. You got all the PC settings. You can be like 4 ultra billion K, like, you know, all the big resolution, 60 frames, you know, all that good stuff. This comes with the DLC as well, I believe. I think.
Yeah, I believe that's what the director's cut.
You also get the Legends mode as well, which was a lot of fun. Honestly, like, Ghost is one of my favorite PS4 games. Like, such a surprise for me, because when I played it, I'm like, I know it was gonna be good, but I was like shocked that I was like, I loved it as much as I did. So
yeah,
definitely recommend it from both of us. I know Travis is a huge Sucker Punch fan, so, but I loved it as well. So definitely would recommend it to the PC crowd. I know that game is, you know, people have been kind of begging for it to be on PC for a while. So
yeah, I honestly sometimes forget that it came out on PS4. I'm like, oh yeah, I did play it on PS4, not on PS5. I still don't have it on PS5 yet, but you know, it to come out on PC May 16th, I think that is going to be exciting. You know, this is Sucker Punch's biggest game ever, and for them to, you know, probably likely make a sequel that will come out in the next few years, I am looking forward to it. But yeah, the I believe this upcoming July is going to be its 4-year anniversary, so I'm definitely going to try to replay the game before then and maybe make a video on it or whatever. But yeah, you know, I'm excited to see how this version of the game turns out, and hopefully it's not, you know, riddled with bugs and glitches and everything like that, because this was co-developed with Sucker Punch Productions and also Nixxis, who have also handled some other PlayStation Studios PC ports. So
yeah, we'll see how that goes. Again, always wait for reviews for this stuff. You know, wait for the game to come out on Steam and then see what people are saying, because, you know, sometimes it could be kind of a mixed bag. So,
yeah. Next bit of news we got here is James Gunn's Superman Legacy has now just been renamed Superman. So, yeah, I mean, it's a lot simpler. It's going to be a lot more, I guess, easier to look up on Google or whatever. You just type in Superman 2025 or whatever. But, yeah, filming for this movie has started and everything like that. Everything's getting moved along with James Gunn's DCU, and I'm excited for it. I cannot wait to see what James Gunn has in mind for this character, because obviously, like we've said before, you know, James Gunn is obviously like very good at what he does. Like, he knows how to make good movies, good superhero movies. And for him to sort of be this direct and sort of this, you know, hands in on this project in particular, he wants to make sure that, like, he can sell people back into the theaters on DC films. And, you know, what better way to do it than to be like, you know what, I'm not going to hire someone else to do it, I'm going to just fucking do it myself. So, and obviously he's very passionate about Superman. I believe if you look on his Threads account, he posts a bunch of, you know, sort of, I guess, like comic books and other things like that that are inspiring this version of Superman that he's trying to create on the big screen. So yeah, cannot wait to see this film, obviously, and I'm sure we'll see a trailer or something like that before the end of this year.
Yeah, it's you know, I think it's a smart move just calling it Superman, because it's kind of just like, oh, it's like, it feels like its own standalone thing. Like, anyone could just watch it and just be like, okay, I'm gonna watch the Superman movie, you know. And I feel like it kind of, you know, separates itself more from the DCU, which people are like, you know, not, you know, this is bad. So, you know, like, I think Batman did well, like the new Batman movie did well because it was just called The Batman, and people was like, yeah, it's all right, it's Batman. Same thing with Joker, is just called Joker, so it's like, yeah, let's watch it. So I think having a simpler name for like a superhero movie is always the best. And, you know, obviously I'm at this point, I believe in James Gunn to make this shit good, because, you know, I think he's knocked it out of the park with all of the Guardians movies. The Suicide Squad was really good, and I'm sure Superman is gonna be good as well, because also I've gained like more of a love for Superman recently with the cartoon that came out, you know, last year. I thought that was really good as well. So, you know, I feel a bit more familiar with the character now, and I'm sure James Gunn's writing is going to be great for Superman as well. So I guess we'll see when the first trailer comes out, but, you know, DC needs a win. You know, it's been a bit, so let's give him that win, please. So yeah, all right. So next we got more Disney Plus shows are coming to 4K Blu-ray. So Obi-Wan, Andor, The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, and Moon Knight. So if you want Obi-Wan on Blu-ray, go ahead.
Stop.
But yeah, Andor being on Blu-ray is pretty sick, because, you know, that's pretty much, you know, everyone fucking loves Andor, and, you know, for good reason. Actually, the Obi-Wan box does look pretty sick.
Yeah, I mean, you know, all things considered, I believe this is after Disney has sort of made a deal with Sony Pictures Entertainment to sort of handle the physical media distribution. So this makes sense. You know, I'm glad that we are seeing more Disney Plus shows being immortalized within a physical media, because obviously when these streaming services go down, or when you actually have no internet, how are you going to be able to watch these shows? Obviously, with the Blu-ray, a physical piece of media. So yeah, I'm glad to see that we are getting these. The funniest thing about the Obi-Wan 4K is that it's complete series, so that just nail in the coffin, there's no season 2, get fucked. you know, like, we shit on the Obi-Wan show a lot, but it's just because, like, a lot of the show, you know, there were, like, really good, like, fan moments. Like, I talked about this with my girlfriend, who's, like, a huge Star Wars fan. Like, there were a lot of hype, fan service-y moments in that show, but a lot of it just, you know, just went nowhere. You know, it was just, like, a story that was just happening, and then we got to the end, and then nothing really changed all that much in the grand scheme of things. So, you know, it's good that we are getting it on 4K Blu-ray, and especially one that looks as good as it does. And I'm glad that we're seeing, you know, Andor and obviously the other MCU stuff come to 4K as well.
Yeah, I think all the boxes look good. Like the Moon Knight one goes pretty hard, actually. That does look pretty good. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's good for people that want physical media. And it looks like they're not skimping on the quality on it, at least from the looks of it anyway.
Yeah, and obviously, if you are one of those people that just also want the extra features on there, there's going to be, like, deleted scenes, gag reels, and mm-hmm. other director commentary stuff on each of these sets. Varies from set to set, so. Next All right. bit of news we got here is the last bit before we get into the Yuzu thing. Rooster Teeth have sadly shut their doors. I believe this was a Warner Brothers Discovery move for them to do. Personally, I didn't watch a lot of Rooster Teeth. Obviously, everyone knows about Red versus Blue. Yes. I think that if you were on YouTube within the early 2010s, even before then, you would know about Red versus Blue, because that was, like, the biggest thing on gaming YouTube, I would say. And for now Rooster Teeth to just be effectively gone is, like, wow, like, that's crazy. Obviously, I haven't watched anything Rooster Teeth within, I would say, like, the past, like, 10 years, honestly. But, you know, for them to just be like, all right, yeah, like, we don't need this anymore is kind of sad. And I'm sure that, you know, a lot of people that work there and sort of have memories about working there, and, you know, people that have continued to watch Rooster Teeth are obviously more sad than me personally. But, you know, it's sort of like seeing, like, a piece of your childhood just end right now in 2024 is like, oh, shit, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I watched Ruby from, like, I forgot what season I stopped, like, 5, I think. And my brother was a huge Rooster Teeth fan. But if you ask any Rooster Teeth fan, like, they were closing, they'll be like, yeah, it makes sense. Like, the quality mm-hmm. has been really down. There's been a lot of controversies, like, workplace abuse, awful mm-hmm. people working there. Like, it's been a fucking mess the last few years at Rooster Teeth. And honestly, a lot of people are saying they're surprised it didn't happen sooner. it's still really sad, and, you know, to see it go down. And it seems like they're going to sell some of the IPs. Like honestly, it wouldn't surprise me if Crunchyroll tries to buy Ruby, because I believe they already did a thing with it anyway. So they might mm-hmm. Ruby might be safe. But, like, I feel like things like Red versus Blue some of the other IP stuff is, like, I don't know what's going to happen to that. And I think they're still keeping the podcasts, like, they're still going to be doing that. But in terms of, like, Rooster Teeth itself, yeah, it's gone. And that is really sad, you know, like, you know, we both grew up with, like, really old YouTube, like 2006-07 YouTube, and they mm-hmm. were, like, the kings of it, right? They were the kings of Machinima. Yeah. So, like, mm-hmm. they were the ones that, like, I think made, like, Machinima's, like, super popular with Red versus Blue and stuff. So seeing them finally go down really is the end of an era. But, you know, it was really self-inflicted. Like, obviously, like, them being shut down by Discovery's, like, you know, yeah, that sucks. But, you know, I there was so much internal drama, and, like, the quality of all their shows have been, like, super down. Like, it just makes sense that they were just going to bite the bullet at some point. So it sucks because, you know, I personally really enjoyed Ruby to an extent. Like, you know, it got way too convoluted by the midpoint, which is why I stopped. But, you know, the fight scenes were really good. You know, some of the world was really cool. The character designs were good. Like, you know, it had some good stuff going for it. But, you know, hopefully it could do better with someone new to hold the IP. But I guess we'll see with that series. But that's really the only thing I see having a future outside of, like, all the other stuff they have. Like, no one give a shit about Genlock, sorry. But and Red vs. Blue, I'm not too sure how that would even work, because, you know, it's Halo, so I don't know how that's gonna, like, work technically. Mm-hmm. But we'll see if anyone picks that up as well. But it's a really sad, you know, day to seeing, you know, yeah, I've been seeing a lot of things I grew up with old internet wise go down this year, and it's kind of been kind of sad. So yeah, not amazing to feel. So hopefully everyone that works there got somewhere. Apparently they all learned, like, right now too, like they always do. So hopefully they're able to get, you know, new jobs, and, you know, everyone could relocate nice. But yeah, it sucks either way. So yeah.
Yeah, just a random tidbit. I was watching some old Some Call Me Johnny reviews, and I forgot at the end he would put the Machinima logo, because he was part of Machinima. I was like, fuck, I forgot about that.
Yeah, he had the MCM, yeah.
Machinima. Yeah, I was just like, man, that shit's crazy. But yeah.
Remember, you know, that? Back in the days.
You know, MCMs, all that other stuff on YouTube, but we'll move on from there, you know. Let's talk about the Yuzu versus Nintendo sort of thing. So Yuzu creators will have to pay Nintendo $2.4 million in damages in end development of Switch emulator. So I will let Damien take the floor with this because I know just like the, I guess like the service level of stuff, which maybe Damien will be able to expand upon that because, you know, honestly, I didn't really know what people were using Yuzu for until this news came out, and I believe people were using it on their Steam Deck to enhance the Nintendo Switch games.
But yeah, I mean, the main reason for Yuzu existing is because, you know, my personal stance on emulators is they should exist, right? Like, I think we both agree on that. I'm not too of the idea of having, like, current, like, systems be emulated. Like, I don't feel like... I think it should exist because it's not illegal for emulators to just exist. But I also feel like I wouldn't do it, right? Because it feels like it's too much almost piracy for me to really justify that. GBA stuff or anything not being produced by Nintendo anymore is fair game, right? Like, I use GBA and DS emulators all the time because I'm just like, who cares, right? Like, I own the game, first off. And secondly, like, if you're not selling it, who cares? So for Switch stuff, it always feels a little, like, weird to me. But, you know, people, you know, have reasons. You know, maybe they do buy the game and they just want to play it at a better frame rate or want to play it at a better resolution. And then the PC version could do that with the emulator, right? The problem with Yuzu is I believe they had a Patreon up and they were, like, sort of, like, charging for, like, premium stuff for it. And that's kind of where things always get bad. Like, as soon as you start profiting off someone's IP, that's like a no-go, right? That's why a lot of paid mods are like, people hate that shit. One is like the principle of it, and two is just that it's literally illegal. You can't profit off someone's IP or anything because you just can't do that. So them doing that was very dumb. I feel like the major blow is Nintendo also went after Citri? I don't really know how you're supposed to say it. It's the 3DS emulator. And that one's a bigger blow because they weren't doing anything wrong. Nintendo doesn't even make any more 3DS. I mean, they do, I guess. They make like 2 3DSs a year at this point. But yeah, they're basically done with the 3DS. Like that's basically a debt console at this point. So that emulator should be able to exist and people should be able to use it. But Nintendo was like, no. I think Nintendo's stance was anything with encryption, you can't emulate. So I think anything past the Wii U, I think you can't like emulate legally, which is bullshit. Like I've never heard anyone said that besides Nintendo. And the reason why people even do this is because, you know, people... You know, there's always reasons for people to emulate stuff. For Switch stuff, it's because they don't like, you know, the Switch runs like shit, right? Like, you know, like that's just how it is. And or for other reasons, it's hard to get the console and it doesn't exist anymore, which is like the more fair reason. I think Nintendo does overstep a lot of the time when it comes to emulation and stuff. And I still feel like Yuzu probably should have stuck around. It was just the Patreon stuff that makes it more sussy to like sort of like side with them. But I will always kind of side with emulation should exist. And Nintendo's the only one that ever targets them. Like, I don't feel like anyone else ever targets them, and they never dent sales. Like people that emulate stuff or pirate stuff, like it never impacts sales that much. Like it really doesn't, like, especially if you're as big as Nintendo. Like, like you lost maybe like, let's be generous. Like you lost like maybe 1 million copies of Tears of the Kingdom, which that's like way too big of a fraction. But even then, that's still like who cares? You're still making a shit ton of money. So I don't know. I feel like them going after emulation so hard is like so annoying. And them settling out of court, because this was settled out of court. They didn't even went through the whole lawsuit. I feel like that also sets like more of a precedent for like them to go after other emulators and stuff. Like if they start going after older emulators, like it's actually over, bro. Like that would be like terrible. Because we've seen them try to go after Dolphin so many times. So and they just can't do it. So hopefully this doesn't like let them bully other people with emulators into closing down as well, because it's pretty bad. But again, it's kind of like a two sides thing, because I know Yuzu was doing sussy stuff and I still don't feel that great about emulating current gen games. Like that's just my own personal standpoint, but I still believe it should have exist, and Nintendo definitely oversteps when it comes to this stuff. So
I mean, when it comes to I guess my stance on emulation, you know, I'm a big like physical guy. Like I like to have my games, I like to play it on the original hardware. But if it's like a fucking Pokemon game and that shit like a couple $100s and obviously a lot of people can't afford that, then it's like, if you want to relive your childhood, fuck it, boot it up on your PC, do what you got to do, you know, save yourself that money, buy groceries with it, you know, live off of that money. But, you know, when it comes to, like you said, current generation stuff, like a Nintendo Switch emulator that you could still buy in the store, you can still buy a Switch, you can still buy those games in the store for the most part. You know, I guess that there's some games that may be a little harder to come by or whatever, but most Nintendo Switch games you could buy in the store. it's a little weird for me to really be like, okay, yeah, like, I guess, like, this emulator is, like, okay to exist, especially when Yuzu, how they were operating, where it was, like, you had, like, this Patreon. And if it was just, like, a Patreon, just for, like, general support and for like, a exclusive, like, newsletter thing where they would, like, update people on, like, what they're doing with the sort of emulation, that would have been fine. But apparently they were, like, you know, blocking off, like, I guess, like, mods and, like, other stuff there. And apparently they also got Tears of the Kingdom early, and then they sort of had that pirated, according to this IGN article, pirated up to 1 million times before release, which is kind of fucking absurd.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that I want to be, you know, I guess, like, generous. I'm sure that most of those people still bought a copy. I want to say that. But obviously, like, that's not, like, 100% sure, right? So, like, that's, like, I guess, like, the gray area of, like, emulation, where it's, like, especially with current gen stuff, is, like, how do we know that, like, you actually did buy a copy for you to justify you downloading this emulator? Because that's the only way that I feel safe or, I guess, comfortable using a emulation, is if I actually own the game, or if the game's actually way too expensive and it's out of print and it's all of these other factors. So, you know, I think that Yuzu definitely put themselves in this situation, but at the same time, Nintendo did go after them in this, I guess, like, aggressive way, and they got to pay pretty much millions and millions of dollars out of their pockets to Nintendo. So, yeah, hopefully they don't go after, like you said, the older emulations and all this other stuff. But, you know, I think that Nintendo kind of in the right, but at the same time, Yuzu also in the wrong. So, you know, it's definitely a double-edged sword between both parties, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, like, legally, like, Nintendo, I guess, is in the right, I guess, because they are charging for stuff. And, you know, emulators themselves aren't illegal. It's just more like ROMs and stuff. And,
yeah,
you know, with all that going on, like, yeah, they had the grounds to, like, sue them and stuff. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. Like, it's hard to say. Like, you do what you got to do. Like, if you need to, like, emulate or pirate something, you know, for financial reasons, and, you know, because gaming is a luxury, and if you just want to have that, like, I don't care. Go ahead. It's mostly just for me. Like, I don't feel comfortable, like, doing that for current gem games. It's just, like, a me thing. But, you know, if you want to do it, do whatever. Like, again, it doesn't hurt these companies, like, most of the time. Like, indie stuff, yeah, definitely don't pirate indie stuff. Like, that's just, like, they definitely do profit off that. But, like, you know, for big AAA stuff, like, if you want to pirate it, whatever, I don't really care. But it is, like, just for me personally, I don't feel great about it, and Nintendo still does have grounds to, like, actually do something about it. But yeah, it's always such a great situation talking about this shit, because it's just like, I get it, but, like, you don't have to be assholes about it, Nintendo. So yeah,
we're not encouraging it. I just say that. But
I'm not encouraging anything, just so I don't get sued. But, you know, do what you gotta do. For me, I you know, I buy my games. So
yeah. Us personally, we are legally purchasing these games. Nintendo, don't send the ninjas to our front doors. But in all seriousness, I just think that, you know, everyone has their own viewpoints, their own situation. I just find it weird when I go on Twitter and I see these articles and I see people in the replies who are just, like, straight pirates. Like, they will not buy or spend a single dollar on a single game. They will do everything in their power to emulate everything. And I'm just like, okay, you're the reason why emulation is sort of, like, viewed or sort of frowned upon, because it's, like, people like you that are just, like, not, I guess, like, contributing to the industry, and you're kind of just, like, you know, getting everything for free, which, you know,
I guess it's more like, if they act more smug about it, it's more like, okay, like, I get it. Like, you pirate stuff, I get it. Like, again, do what you gotta do, but, like, I'm, you know, you're kind of annoying. So it's like, I get it. I don't know. I feel like it's easier at this point in my life. Like maybe when I was younger, I would use, like, uTorrent to do stuff. I just feel like, man, that's so much work. Like, I don't want to do that. I know that sounds weird, because, like, you have to work to get money, and that's more work. But I just feel like I just throw money at something and I get the thing. I'm like, whatever. There you go. It's just, I don't feel like dealing with, like emulator settings and, like, all that shit. I'm just like, it's okay. Or torrent files. So, yeah, that's okay.
Whole lot of work. But, you know, it is what it is. I'm pretty sure that's everything we have to say. It does suck that Citra did have to go under because of this. I think that that's 3DS preservation is definitely, like, a huge thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that there's, you know, other pockets of the internet that are trying to keep that alive for certain games. But, yeah, you know, Nintendo is Nintendo. That's sort of not going to change anytime soon. And they're going to do what they want within their own sort of little rule book that they've set out for themselves. But
So they could charge you Luigi's Mansion 2 for, like, $60. That's why they're taking it out.
I will gladly buy that, because I've never played the game before.
I never, like, beat it. I, like, didn't like it at first. So we'll see if my opinion changes. But
Yuzu is dead, along with Citra, unfortunately. But, you know, they... they were treading some pretty gray waters. So, you know, it's definitely a little bit of their fault, a little bit of Nintendo going after them as well. So, like I said, double-edged sword situation. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I think that's about it. Is there anything else you'd like to add, Damien?
Nope, that's it. We don't pirate games.
Yes, we do not pirate
Nintendo
games.
Do not go after me. I buy
Nintendo,
your games.
I've never emulated anything in my life, I swear.
I did. But I'm only like 20 years old, so it's fine.
Yeah, thank you guys for watching the Travis and Damien podcast, episode 133. We will see you guys 2 weeks from now with another episode.
Bye.